Amen. Mrs. Albert.
Mrs. Katrina.
Say hello, Katrina.
Hello, Katrina. I just want to say something about the time. This is a now time. In God, this is a now time. He is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So with him, this is a now time. And just recently, we were actually in New York State and doing some meetings. And during the meeting, I was worshiping, and my watch fell off my wrist. And I didn't think anything of that, but the next day, the couple we were with and ministering with, the girl, Corinne, went to walk into the church where we were, and her watch fell off her wrist. Now, you think, okay, God, you're trying to tell me something. So I got into worship and was asking the Lord what was happening, and he said, I want to take my people out of Kairos time. Kairos time is our natural time. It's minutes, hours, days, our lifespan. But he wants to take us into Chronos time, which is his time, which is a now time. And he's saying that there are a lot of people in his kingdom, his children, that have had promises that you've perhaps waited for since you were a child. You've heard the Lord say, I'm going to do this for you, or promise you something. And you believed him, and you've waited and waited to the point where you think, I didn't hear him. It wasn't him. That was my thoughts. But God is saying this is a now time. If you will pick up those dreams, if you will pick up those words and just remind him this is a now time, you will get the promise that you've been waiting for.
You know, it was shortly after Katrina, I call her Katrina and Tina, depending on whether I'm happy or upset, my dear little wife. After Katrina shared that word, there was an altar call at the end of that particular meeting, I think it was. And this elderly lady come and stood in front of me, and she had to be in her 70s, probably mid-70s, early 80s, okay. But she was an elderly woman, and I was looking at her, but I didn't see an elderly woman. I seen a little girl that was probably about 7 or 8 years old sitting on a pew, like one of the old wooden pews like you have at the back here. And I said, that was you. And she put her head down and she said, yeah, that was me. I said, you asked the Lord for something when you were a little girl. And he said he was going to bless it and give it to you. And you've given up on that promise. And she nodded her head, yes. And the Lord said, tell her I'm going to revive it. Restoration is coming to that dream. Restoration is coming to that dream. And tell her I'm going to add years to her life. Like, we are in a time of restoration, and we are in a time when God's going to start restoring them things that have slipped away. He's a faithful God. What you prayed 20 and 30 years ago, you might have forgot, but he has not forgotten. You might have forgot, but he hasn't forgotten. We're not changing the tune. We're in the same river, and we're going to end up in the same place. But the Lord spoke to me a little bit earlier. I was back there worshiping, and the Lord spoke to me, and he said something that, I guess to most people it would sound weird, but it's okay if the Lord said it, right? He said, tell my people they have a drinking problem. They don't drink enough. A lot of you have put your cup on the shelf and you forgot about it. Spiritually, reach into that shelf and take your cup. and say, Father in heaven, I'm going to repent because I haven't been drinking enough of you. And tonight I'm asking you to fill my cup. I'm not asking for a full cup. I'm asking for the overflow. Father, I want to thank you for this drink that you're going to give me. Now, if you forgot, the instructions are on the side of the cup. It says, tilt head back, open mouth, and tip cup and let ingredients pour in. I think what that girl was saying is we need another one. Father, fill them up. Fill them up, Lord. Fill them up. Glory. You know, I don't believe it's by coincidence that you're here, and I don't really believe it's by coincidence that I'm here tonight. And this message really isn't for the person in front of you, and it's not for the person beside you, it's not for the person behind you. This message is for you. Now, why is it I say I really don't believe that I'm here by coincidence? Now, remember, this is only my opinion, okay? This is my opinion. I believe Donald Trump is the right man. And we're not talking about politics tonight. This is just what I'm saying. I believe Donald Trump is the right man. I love the man. And I love what he's doing. I love the way he's just shaking things. Like, you know, it's good. It's really good. He's just getting in there and he's shaking things. I love him. But I don't like everything he's doing. I heard one British man say this. He says, if Donald Trump is the first man, if he gets kicked out of office, if he gets kicked out of office, he's going to be the first president of the United States to get kicked out of office for keeping his word. That's all he's doing. He's doing what he said he'd do. You know, right or wrong, I'm not the judge of that. I'm just saying he's doing what he said he'd do. And anyways, now this is what I don't like about him. And once again, this is just me, okay? I don't like the idea that he wants to stop all criminals from coming into the country. You know why? You see, I had a criminal record. And I was thinking, whoa. Man, like, I can understand why he's doing it. He's trying to protect you people. That's all he's trying to do. And by the way, that's in his job description. He's a president of the United States of America. He's sworn into office, and he's saying, Mark, I'm going to do whatever I can to take care of you and to take care of your family. I'm going to try to do everything that I can do. And if it has to kick some people out, I'm telling you, they're out of here, Mark. They're out of here, and that's all there is to it. And that's it. So, and I'm a Canadian, and I had a criminal record, and I was gonna come into America because, like, I'm thinking, man, I'm already booked to go to Indiana, and there's other places we'll be going into the States in time to come, and if I have a criminal record, I won't be able to get into the States. I better see what I can do to get this thing nullified. So anyways, I went to my member of parliament and I said, look, I said, this is the problem. Oh, the dream. The dream first. Yeah, okay, I'll run by the dream first. You ever have a skeleton in your closet? You know, when I was a kid, it didn't take a whole lot to be bigger than me. But anyways, there's this one guy, he was always, I was always intimidated around him. He never threatened me, and he never hurt me. But for some reason, I just didn't like to be around him, as if he was going to hurt me or something. But he never did threaten me or anything. So I was intimidated whenever I was around him. And then, now that actually happened in real life. About 4 months ago, 3 months ago, whatever, I had a dream, and I seen this guy who I hadn't seen for years. probably 55 years. And I just hadn't seen him. But I seen him in the dream. In the dream, he stood at least 8 feet tall. And once again, that fear just come over me. And the Lord said, no. And we weren't in a staring contest, but I didn't back away. And I looked at him, and he was looking at me. And all of a sudden, it just dawned on me. There's nothing to be afraid of. And I went to turn, and he fell backwards as if he went down on the spirit. And that's the last I seen of him. And I woke up, and I thought, what in the world? Why a dream like that? Anyways, I spoke it out to my wife. And she says, well, Albert, in this dream, he would represent a Goliath. And I thought, why would I want to, like, what Goliath am I facing? Not realizing I was super concerned about this criminal record thing. Like, it could prevent me from coming into America. And why wouldn't you want me? So anyways, I went to my MP and I said, look, I said, this is the situation. I do go down into America quite frequently to speak in churches and that kind of stuff. And I just like to go down to into America sometimes, but I got this criminal record. What can I do to get rid of it? And she said, well, first of all, go to the Ontario Provincial Police and check to make sure you have a criminal record. So I went to the Ontario Provincial Police and I explained the situation and they said, let's see your driver's license. And I gave them my driver's license and they ran it through the criminal check. And she says, Mr. Cannon, there's nothing there. I said, oh, are you sure? She says, it would have to show up. I said, thank you. So I went back to my MP because my MP said, I want to know what they say to you. So I went back to my MP. My MP said, hey, man, there's nothing there. They said, the MP said, did they do a fingerprinting on you? And I said, no. And they said, Mr. Cannon, you better go back and have them do a fingerprinting on you and put it through the national data. I went back and I said, look, I said, the MP says you guys should do a fingerprinting on me and put it through the national data. And the woman behind the desk said, well, if you want, you can have your fingerprints done. It's going to cost you, and you're going to end up with dirty fingers, and you'll have to drive 30 miles to get it done, and you'll have to pay for it. And then after you do all that, they're going to say, can I see your driver's license, please? And they're going to do the same thing that we do. And I said, well, you're saying that it's not worth it to do that. And she said, you're right. She said, let's see your driver's license. So she went and she ran it through. She come back and she says, there's nothing there. And she said, you weren't in jail, were you? I said, well, yes, I was. She said, you actually went to jail. And I said, well, yes, I did. 9 months definite and 6 months indefinite. She said, oh, that's a different story. Let's see your driver's license. I thought, this driver's license is getting more miles on it in the police station than it ever did on the highway. So I give it to her, and she goes and runs it through. And she comes back with my driver's license, and she says, are you sure you were in jail? Now, my memory is not the best. You can ask my wife about that. But I do remember I did go to jail, but absolutely nothing showed up. Nothing showed up. And I really believe that we're living in a time now. People are not only going to get healed, but you're going to get healed and the scars are going to disappear. Something happened. It went up a notch. It went up a notch. Anyway, this is really what I want to share tonight. You know the story in the Bible that talks about the woman with the issue of blood? She's got a situation, and she's actually walking towards Jesus. Like, this come to me tonight when we were singing that. I'm hungry for you. I'm hungry for you. I'm really getting concerned for myself, and maybe you can identify with this. Like, we know the right words, and we know how the story goes. But are we really meaning what we're singing? I'm hungry for you. This woman with the issue of blood, she was a desperate woman. There's different things in that story that shows us her desperation. Number one, she had an issue of blood. She was bleeding. Nobody could heal her. She was bleeding for 12 years. She went and spent all of her money trying to get healed, and nobody could help her. She heard of Jesus, and she thought, you know, if I could only reach out and touch this man, I'll get healed. But you see, there was a couple of problems. Number one, she had to get to Jesus. The other number one is it would be illegal for her to be around people because she had an issue of blood. She would be considered unclean. And there would be people in the crowd that would know that she shouldn't be there. Such as your religious figures, the scribes and the Pharisees. They would know she shouldn't be there. She was putting her life on the line to reach out and touch. Now, what I'm getting at is this woman, she was hungry. She was hungry for what she needed. She knew where she could get it, and she wasn't going to waste her time. This woman, she actually set the clock the way you would set an alarm clock. She set the clock for the exact time that she would get healed. She didn't say, on this day I'm going to get healed. She didn't even say, on this hour I'm going to get healed. She didn't say, at this minute I'm going to get healed. She said, at this very second, this is where I'm going to get healed. She knew it because she set a clock in her spirit for the timing of when she was going to get healed. Now, a couple of things happen. She has to get to Jesus, but she's got to get through all these people. And before it really starts talking about this story, Jesus is on his way to Jairus' house to heal his son. And it says that they literally had to press through people. You ever go to a ball game or some kind of event where the crowd is really tight and, you know, you sort of have to forget about manners and you have crowd manners? Get out of my way. You know, it would be something like that. Only these people are, I'm talking about, they are right crowded up tight. And Jesus is bumping into people and people are bumping into him because the crowd is so numerous. And they want to be close to him. And you got this woman who's probably bent over, like she's not a healthy specimen at this point. But the thing is, she was like, she had the kind of hunger that God is looking for. God wants to feed the hungry, but first of all, the hungry got to want to eat. This woman was hungry, but she wanted to eat also. And she was thinking, if I could only touch the bread of life, I can smell the bread, but I want to touch that bread of life. And I know if I can touch the bread, I know I'm going to get healed. Like there was something about it. There was a real driving desperation in this woman's little heart to make it to her goal. And she literally had to squeeze her hand in between different people. And the last obstacle that she would have to get through to get to Jesus would have been his closest followers, the disciples. Don't we get in each other's way? Don't we get in each other's way? Here she is, probably reaching in between Peter and John. And you can see her hand physically pushing its way through. And she literally makes it and touches the hem of Jesus' garment. She is instantly healed. She's instantly healed. At that very moment, I can picture Jesus bouncing off of his disciples because they're all pressed up against him. And then Jesus asks a question. Who touched me? Who touched me? Probably Peter. Who touched you? We're banging up against you. Who touched you? What are you talking about? Who touched you? Jesus said, somebody touched me. There's somebody here that touched me. And I want to know who it is that touched me. And the disciples says, everybody's touching you. Everybody's touching you. And you want to know who touched you? He says, somebody touched me because healing virtue left my body. Jesus wants to touch people. But there's people that want to touch Jesus. And Jesus is looking for those people who really want to touch him. Whether you like it or whether you don't like it, he's here tonight. He's been reaching out to you. Have you been reaching out to him? I was in Cuba just recently. I don't really know how I feel about that. My emotions are off the charts in good and bad, in good and bad. My emotions are just there, and I'll try to explain why. I've seen people in Cuba that are desperately hungering and thirsting for the things of God. We went there, there were seven of us. We went there to bless them with what we had in the gospel of Jesus Christ. We could not give it to them fast enough. The second woman I prayed for, we are packed into the church. Revival's happening there, but it's not happening the way we would think revival would happen. The churches were packed out in most cases, but the churches would be a boat from here to that pillar long, and a boat from here to that pillar wide. So you're in a shoebox. When I was speaking, I would be this far away from the front row. I had a word of knowledge of a woman. Well, I didn't know it was a woman. Had a word of knowledge, and a woman responded. It was about a pain and an aching in the back of her right eye. This woman put her hand up, and I said, "That's you?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Come up to the front." Now, she'd be sitting one seat behind Mark, and there'd be about two seats on this side. And once again, we're squeezed in there like sardines. She stood up, and she wasn't a young woman. She was holding onto the back of the chairs and making her way along to get to the end. She got to the end. She reached out, and she grabbed the chair in front of her and come and stood in front of me. And I assumed that was because there wasn't even enough room for everybody's feet. We were just packed in there. So I went over, and I'm assuming that she has a headache. I put my two hands on her head like this. She grabbed my one hand, she pulled it off her head, and she slapped it in her face. Like, she literally took my hand and just slapped it in her face. She went into a full-blown tailspin and fell on the floor. And I honestly thought something devastating happened in a bad way to her. When she was getting up off the floor, she was down like this on all fours, but when she was getting up, she was going like this. I called the interpreter over and I said, ask her what's wrong. The interpreter bent down and asked her what was wrong. The interpreter stood up and said, "Albert, there's nothing wrong. She was totally blind, and now she can see." We were set loose to walk in and amongst the congregation that was standing up. You'd walk alongside of some people, and they would start demonically manifesting. Not in the North American way. It was not like that. It was not, "Well, come on, come with me into the back room." Like, it would start manifesting right there. All you'd have to do is walk beside and rub on them, and they would start manifesting. Things would come out of their body. It was not a pretty sight. I honestly don't know if we want revival to come to our churches. And I'll tell you why. Because a lot of people in our churches today value your carpet much more than you value a person. We value the wrong things. Do we really want revival? Yes, I want revival. I'll tell you how much I want. I just want to get back in that environment. I want to go back into that environment. Katrina and I were off to Cuba again the end of September, the beginning of October. End of September, I guess. I keep getting corrected on that. Anyways, we're going back. We're paying for the whole thing ourselves. I'm not asking for your money. Like, when you see the real thing, it really doesn't matter. The thing is, I'm hungry for revival. Like, there's no cosmetics of Christianity there. They want it. They're hungry for it. And they're not going to miss it. They realize when somebody with the gospel comes through, it might be the last person there, and they're reaching out and taking what they can get while they can get it. They're serious about it. They're so serious about it, I wonder, and I question myself, how serious am I? When I got back to North America, got back into Canada, well, I was thinking, is it just a dream? What I just witnessed, did I really witness it? And when I went back to the church that I went back to, I seen all the church stuff. And that's what it was, is it was church stuff. And there's something about the cosmetics just doesn't measure up with the real thing. There's something that nudges in your spirit that comes alive, and it's almost like it's saying, this is why I was born. This is what prophets, this is what kings, and this is what queens desired to see and desired to have. And I'm going to tell you something. It's so easy to minister to people that are hungry. It's so easy. You don't have to try to make anything happen. It just happens. If you have to do anything, all you have to do is walk in the anointing. We didn't try to cast out demons. They just manifested, and we dealt with it right there. There was 7 of us that went. I 5 and 2. I know what 7 is. There was 7 of us that went. There was 5 adults and 2 kids. One of the kids, Summer, she was 11 years old. I can't remember. His name sounds like Brazen, but it's not Brazen. He had his 12th birthday there. They were both raised in a North American church setting. When the demons started to manifest, and when the signs and miracles really started to happen, nobody had to teach either one of them kids what to do. They just come to life. It's like it was always on the back burner of their lives. They've never been in that environment before. They've never seen demons cast out of people. They just went to church. But when those things started to manifest, them 2 kids, it's almost like that's what they did from birth. I really don't know what to say. Like, just even talking to you, I stop and wonder, did this really happen? Well, I know it's really happened. We're getting, and the, we're communicating by email. And the evangelist that we're communicating with, he doesn't speak English, and we don't speak Spanish. We got one of them Google interpreters on our website, I guess. I don't know, but well, that's how we communicate. They want us to come back. For, I think we were there 8 days. And for at least 4 days, I experienced what I experienced in Lakeland, Florida. in Lakeland, Florida. I was sitting there with, we were living in England at the time. We were sitting there with about eight people from England that went to the church that we went to. And I could literally feel rain. I could feel it. And I kept saying to Katrina and the rest of the people, I could feel rain. And they would all look at the air conditioners and see if anything's leaking. And no matter where I was, I could feel rain. And that's all it was. Not all the time, but at different times, I could feel rain. Like I wasn't getting wet, but I could feel like just rain. And then finally, one night, somebody was up on the platform and said, we're having so many different things being said to us that we can't keep track of them all. And one of the things is different people have been coming up to me and telling us that they could feel rain. I told you I could feel rain. So there you go. In Cuba, I could feel rain. It only rained one day, but that's not the day that I felt the rain. I could feel rain. It was nice and sunny, and I could feel rain. And I kept telling the other people in the team, I can feel rain. And they were looking at me as if, crazy, man. No, I'm telling you, I can feel rain. Anyways, this one day, I don't know if it was the last day or not. I don't think it was the last day. But anyways, we were invited into this room to eat lunch. And they just fed us, the team. And all our leadership was in the room, standing behind the chairs. And the room was a small room. It was only big enough for the table and people to sit down and eat comfortably. But they crammed all our leadership in there, which was about eight or nine other people. And once again, as we're eating, I could feel rain. And I said, I can feel the rain again. And Michelle, she was the one that organized this trip. I can feel it too. And I think Ruth was the other girl. She said, I can feel it too. Now, there might have been another person, but there was at least three of us. We could feel this rain. The pastor turned around that was in charge after we were done eating and says, have you got anything that you'd like to mention about this trip? Is there anything special? And everybody said basically what they felt was special to them. And I said, well, I would just like to say, for the last 4 days, I know it's not raining, but I could feel rain. And I said, and in this room, once again, I could feel the rain. And there's a couple of other of the team that can feel the rain also now. And then I just took off into talking about Elisha sending his servant to the top of the mountain and seeing the cloud about the size of a hand of a man. And I just start yelling at the leadership, run, run, hurry up, run, it's coming. Anyways, I shared what I seen, and there was another part to it. I could see a rain cloud coming in from the east and over the country of Cuba, covering the country of Cuba. And it was a rain cloud of revival. Now, I'm going to tell you what I heard. The pastor said, this is what I heard. I heard him say, we are not going to accept that word. Now, if you ever want to, say, delete something very important on your computer, when you give a word like that and you hear them say, we are not going to accept that word. It does something to you. There was other things said, but that was the key thing that I heard. And I just went, And everybody was just sort of looking at each other. Anyways, after the meal, we got up and we're walking out. Now, we had one person on the team, a young woman. I don't know if she's young, she's small. She's the kind of person that had sympathy and mercy, like she was just gifted in that area. I'm sure she could make the devil feel good about going to hell. Like she was just that kind of a comfort. She come up and she said, "Albert, what's wrong?" And I said, "Lynn, nobody likes to be rejected, but there was really no reason for that. Like it could have been done in a different way." And she stood back and she said, "What are you saying?" And I said, "The way that I got shot down in there." She said, "What are you saying?" And I told her. And she said, "Albert, that's not what he said." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "He said there's been two or three other prophets from different parts of the world, they come in and said exactly what you said, but because he knows you're not from this country and you don't know what's happening in this nation, he's accepted it for the first time." Then the evangelist that was traveling with us, that was from Cuba, come up to me and said, "Albert, that man in there is one of the very few people that has the authority to sign religious visas to invite pastors and prophets and teachers, evangelists back into the country. And he pointed at you on the way out and he said he wants you to come back." Like there's just something about when you're hungry to see the Spirit of God move. If you press in and if you touch him, he'll touch you. I don't know where you're coming from tonight. I don't know what your needs are. I don't know if you are playing church. I don't even know if you're a Christian. I don't know that. Only you can answer them questions. But I can do this. If you're hungry, but only if you're hungry for the real thing, and if you really want to touch Jesus, and it's up to you, I can pray for you, but I'm sorry, it's not about me. I can't give you anything. But I know that there's somebody in the house. If you reach out, and if you reach out and have that special kind of touch, and it's really a touch of faith. It's a touch of faith. If you can exercise your faith, and if you can believe and reach out and touch Jesus by your faith, you'll get what you're asking for. It's up to you. All I am is the little Indian from Canada that's delivering a telegram. He's here tonight. Are you really hungry? Do you really want to see revival? Are you sure you're willing to roll up your carpets if that's what it takes? It's not going to be a pretty sight, and it's not going to smell nice either. But I'll tell you this much. You'll see people getting delivered. Amen. You'll see things happening. God's going to start moving in such a way, and he's only going to move with those people that are really hungry. I'm going to leave the front open. If you want to come up and do business, the front's open. I might pray for you, but it surely is not about me. My wife might pray for you. It's not about her. Jesus is willing to touch you. Are you willing to touch Jesus?